Welcome to the House Committee on Rules. Today is February 23rd.
Afternoon.
Good to see a nice audience today. We have a packed agenda. Let me tell you what we're thinking. We are going to start off with Senate Bill 1566, proceed to SJM 201. Go back to the top of the agenda to House Bill 4173. We hope to hear from folks. If there's anyone who would like to testify on changes to 4176, it would be good to let the committee of assistant know. We will move into 4176 to have additional conversation. And then Senate Bill 1509. We might stand at ease temporarily on a couple of these things, so we will try to be transparent as we go forward. With that, I would like to open a work session on Senate Bill 1566A. Colleagues, this is a bill that over from the Senate with, I believe, a one-word or two-word change to current statute.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1566A requires the Department of Geology and Mineral Industries to maintain a website identifying seismic risk category for public K through 12 schools, requires annual school district and school performance report cards to include information on accessing the website, directs school and education service districts to notify DAGAMI of structural changes likely to require reassessment of the risk. It's effective July 1st, 2012. It codifies current practice of DAGAMI to have this information on the website, and folks are in the room if there are any questions.
Thank you, Cheyenne. And do we have anyone who was interested in testifying or talking about this?
Only a couple of folks as a resource, available as a resource.
No, it's the...
You do have the director side. Of the agency here.
Okay. Colleagues, I'll give you a moment to look at this bill.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Rigdon.
Anyone here to answer questions about
this? I believe we have the director of the Department of Geology and Mineral Industries with us. Would you like to join us? Thank you very much. We're not expecting any kind of testimony unless you want to say anything in particular, but it would be great to answer any questions we have. Thank you for being here. You can just introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Co-Chair. My name is Vicki McConnell. I'm the Director of the Oregon Department of Geology and Mineral Industries, known as DAGAMI.
Welcome to House
Thank
Rules.
You.
Representative Wingert.
Vicki, I'm not sure you are the person I want to direct this question at, but anytime, because I've dealt with bills in the past where we've required public schools to put something on their website, and if memory serves, as disturbing as this fact might be, I'm not sure every school has a website. And so I'm wondering how the bill envisions what happens if they don't.
Co-chairs and Representative Wingert, actually the information will be kept on our website, the Department of Geology and Mineral Industries website, and it's the result of a assessment that we did on all public K through 12 schools on their seismic vulnerability report that we submitted back to the legislature in 2007, and we maintain on our website right now. The idea here would be that the Department of Ed, through some of their larger websites, has a link to that report. The idea would be that when the Department of Ed sends out their annual reports on their schools, that they would then have that link on that report so that parents would have easy access to know where to go look about the seismic vulnerability of their schools.
Follow-up, Representative?
Yeah, I just... So the mandate here that they must provide... Okay. So I had when this was still on the Senate, I had this described to me as there needed to be some link on the school's website to your report, but that's not what this bill is actually doing.
Co-chairs and Representative Wingert, not exactly. We have the information. If you go to the Department of Ed, Department of Education, and to their Oregon.gov site, they have a link. The Department of Education is required to submit to parents a report on schools that includes such things as how they're doing with No Child Left Behind, a whole variety of reports. That will also include now a link to our website, so they can easily access it from our website if they're interested.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Barnhart, did you have?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate it. Based on the description we just heard, I'm wondering why we needed a bill at all. But then I realized Section 4 requires that the school districts provide information to the department concerning construction of a new school building or modifying an existing building in a manner that might affect the seismic risk category, as well as the information to parents. That does look like it may be require statutory change. Otherwise, it didn't make sense to me why we would write a statute for this. What concerns me about it is that we are in the middle right now of developing a new state portal, which hopefully will eventually include new websites for many of our departments that will make life much easier in terms of navigation for citizens, including parents. I would hate to have a law stuck in the middle of that that gums up the works. And frankly, I don't know whether this one would or not.
Co-chairs and representative, I can't speak directly to that. I don't think it would. Everything that, my understanding of any new portals that the state would have would easily link to all the information that all state agencies have on theirs. And that's actually how it is right now with the Oregon.gov.
Yeah, and if I could follow up, it appears to me the operative part of the bill is in Section 4 that requires the district to keep the department informed, and that's fine. Thank you.
That's correct.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Berger.
No, that was my comment exactly. The only thing this thing really does is say, if you build a new school, they have to know about it so it can link it up.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Esquivel.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. The school districts today, when they do any new construction or renovation of a building, they have to go through seismic retrofit anyway, do they not, state law?
Co-chairs, Representative Esquivel, that is correct. New buildings must be built to the existing standards, seismic standards today.
And that includes remodeling?
Not necessarily, and I don't have all the information on the building codes. If you do major renovation, you would have to renovate to the seismic standards in that area. If you do minor renovations, it's my understanding you don't necessarily have to renovate to seismic standards. Is it okay to add one more little bit of information to this? Along with our assessment that we did in 2005 and reported back to the legislature in 2007, additional to that, there is now a grant program that is available through the Office of Emergency Management. It's called the Seismic Rehabilitation Grant Program. It's available for schools, public schools, and emergency facilities to apply for funds to rehabilitate schools or emergency facilities seismically. And that's the interest, is to make sure that if new schools have been built, and they would be built for the seismic standards, or if schools have been rehabilitated, that we would have that information available on our website as well. And so that information will now feed back to us.
Follow-up, Representative.
No, I'm just wondering, if I went on a website and looked at it, say there's 1 through 10 and my child's school was 5, it's a 5. When does it come into play? After an earthquake?
I'm sorry, sir, I don't quite understand.
Well, I mean, if I look at your site and it says, let's say 1's the super-duper model that doesn't ever fall down an earthquake, and 10, it's going to fall down on a heavy wind or something. And this, my child's school's a 5. What kind of a tool is that for me as a parent? I assume this is what this is for, is for parents.
Yep, that's correct, co-chairs and Representative Esquivel. The assessment that we did was specific to seismic vulnerability of schools, And the rating system we have on there is clearly explained that the site, it would be the vulnerability of a school and what would be considered a maximum earthquake for that area. So if you have a school that would be in the high-risk category, it would indicate that it's very vulnerable to any earthquake activity in that area. And then it would go down to medium, low, et cetera.
Well, follow up? Mm-hmm. I guess what I'm getting at is if I can't move my child out of the school, what's the relevancy of that?
Again, co-chairs and Representative Escoval, the relevancy is the ability then to identify the schools that may need the conversation of either seismic rehabilitation or the conversation of perhaps it's time to look at building a new school.
Further discussion? I'm going to give you a second to germinate on the bill. I'm going to close the work session and come back to it. So given that some of you might want to reflect on the testimony, but we'll come back to it. I'm going to thank you very much for being here. We're going to close the work session on Senate Bill 1566. I would like to come back for a vote on that, colleagues. So,
I changed some people's thinking.
Let me know how you're feeling.
Right now or later?
Oh, right now. No, in a notes. We'll open a work session on SJM 201A.
Chairs and members of the committee, SJM 201A urges the President and Congress of the United States to allow Oregon counties to manage revested Oregon and California Railroad grant lands located in counties or to enact the ONC Trust Conservation and Jobs Act.
That's part of the problem.
Congress established a land grant in 1866 to promote completion of the Oregon and California Railroad, the ONC, between Portland and San Francisco. They took back title to about 2.9 million acres after ONC and its successor, Southern Pacific, violated terms of the grant, and then revested about 93,000 acres of Coos Bay Wagon Road lands in 1919 for similar reasons. In 1937, Congress passed the ONC Lands Act and put the lands under the jurisdiction of the U.S. Department of Interior. This memorial urges local management of those revested lands within the specific county's borders or to enact the ONC Trust Conservation and Jobs Act negotiated by U.S. Representatives DeFazio, Walden, and Schrader.
Thank you, Cheyenne. So just for the interest of transparency, we have all these things listed today as work session because they've had public hearings on the Senate side. We do have the testimony in front of us from Sierra Club. Is someone from the Sierra Club here wanting to testify on the SJM? Is there anyone else who's interested in testifying on this joint memorial? Mr. Barrows, was that a yes? Bill, that's a yes. If the three of you would come up, that'd be great. We'll start with you three. We realize things move quickly. We expect there's been some due diligence on the Senate side, but it's good to know where people are on this. So,
Chairs Kotek and Olson, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Ivan Molesky. I'm the conservation director for the Oregon Chapter Sierra Club. I turned in testimony with a number of attachments on Tuesday. I hope that you have those in front of you because I won't read that, but I will highlight a few key points. We respectfully urge your opposition to SJM 201A. We believe this memorial presents a misguided approach to resolving the ONC County funding issue and endorses federal legislation that, in our view, could amount to essentially the largest public lands giveaway for private interests since railroad land grants of the late 1800s. Under the legislation proposed by the congressman that was referenced, while the land would technically remain in federal ownership, it would, for all intents and purposes, be managed as if it were in private industrial forest lands, well over 1 million acres. These are areas that provide clean water for many Oregon communities, endangered species habitat for salmon and other species, and recreational access for members of the public all over the state. In previous sessions, the legislature has adopted memorials in support of this continued funding of the Secure Rural Schools payments. The Sierra Club supports those efforts. We are working actively on two pieces of legislation in Congress to make sure that that happens. We're concerned that adopting this resolution at this time sends a mixed message at a terrible time when our United States senators are working overtime to extend those Secure Rural Schools payments. And we believe this memorial presents a distraction of very tangible activities the legislature could and should be taking with regard to these issues. We're glad to see that House Bills 4175, 76, and 77 have been introduced to address some of the county funding issues. Unfortunately, we feel that more time has been spent on this memorial than on those important pieces of legislation. Specifically, moving forward, we believe there's a number of steps the state could take. We believe that a shared responsibility approach to addressing the county funding issue is the right way to go. That would involve the federal government coming up with a third of the funds, the state coming up with a third of the funds, and counties being responsible for coming up with one-third of the funds. At the state level, we believe that a modest increase in the state's forest products harvest tax could provide significant new revenue to address some of the issues with county funding. And I want to talk very briefly about what I consider to be the elephant in the room on this discussion on federal lands, and that is private raw log exports. And this state right now only charges $3.75 per 1,000 board feet of timber that's cut. Right now, export prices on average around $500 per 1,000 board feet. So we're charging an extremely low tax rate. We could increase it by three or four times and have very minimal impact on the industry while generating new revenue. In fact, in the time that I wrote this legislation or this testimony on Tuesday and today, there's new information from the United States Forest Service's Pacific Northwest Research Station. Raw log exports jumped from 2010 to 2011 42% over nearly roughly $1.2 billion worth of timber was exported, raw timber, unmilled, from Oregon and Washington ports just in 2011 alone, a major increase from 2010. So some of the press releases from the United States Forest Research Station, the Oregon Department of Forestry, and some of the data on logging numbers are meant to illustrate that, and I'd urge you to review those before you adopt this resolution. So in conclusion, I respectfully thank you for your time on this issue. Again, we believe there's a number of steps that the state could take, and we believe there is significant logging on Oregon BLM lands. I believe 280 million board feet was logged in 2010 on federal lands in Western Oregon. Many people agree there could be an increase in a sustainable way that would not garner additional appeals. We do not believe the legislation presented in Congress is that sustainable approach. So if your hope is to support increased federal logging, there are other ways to do that. This resolution and this legislation are not the way to go. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Malski. Thank you, Madam Co-Chair Kotek, Co-Chair Olson, Committee for the Record, Bill Cluding, Carpenters, and Joiners. Committee, we've been in this fight now for, I've been in this fight for 30 years. We've totally destroyed two-thirds of this state, the economies of these counties. The infrastructure of these states is gone. The payments we got from Secure Rural Schools Fund that kept the public sector going, that kept our schools going, our police, but that's all it did. We still lost the industrial sector of these counties. I've heard people say, well, you've had years to redo your whole system where you don't need this timber, you don't need the secure funds. That's all these counties have got. That's all they had. And the word says the government took the land back. But they did promise a sustainable harvest forever. They have failed on that promise, committee. It's time we step forward. It's time we've done something. These counties have been on a dialysis machine all these times, but now somebody is getting ready to shut the switch off. The state has nothing in the Constitution on how to take care of a county once it goes into default. If that happens, you folks have really got your hands full. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Dave Barrows. I've represented the ONC counties for 47 years. It's been a great pleasure and honor. And I will tell you, with all the trials and tribulations we've had, and I could go sidebar with a whole series of stories that are currently going on, I won't take the committee's time. This is a memorial. And what it does, it says, congratulations to three congressmen who have worked hundreds and hundreds of personal hours to craft a piece of legislation that will set aside half of the ONC lands for the issue, for the things that Ivan is concerned about, and have the other half of the acres managed by a board of trustees with all stakeholder groups represented in an effort to get some timber revenues that will get these counties back. And as Representative Barnhart can tell you from the meeting yesterday morning of the task force on county payments, these counties are about to go off the cliff. They heard pretty compelling testimony from Curry County, and Curry County is the first in line, but not the last. So I urge you to enact this. Ivan talked about log exports. I've been fighting log exports for 65, since 1965, when I started with the ONC. The federal government, no timber off of federal government lands, and these would still be federal government lands, can be exported. So I don't even know why that subject came up. But the fact of the matter is, this is the best opportunity these counties have had in 20 years to undo the Gordian knot. And I urge your adoption of this memorial. Thank you.
Representative Freeman.
Thank you, Co-Chair Kotek, and I'll try to be brief. I know you have a full agenda, and thank you for the panel today. And I had to say this the other day, I'll say it again. I don't mean any disrespect to anybody that's at the panel today. I realize that you all work for certain entities that have certain views, and I don't mean this personal. But I think part of the testimony we heard today is exactly the problem we have on this entire issue. The fact that taking half of these lands into conservation isn't enough. We want them all. Stop everything. Don't kill another tree. I represent parts of Douglas, Josephine, and Jackson County. I grew up there. I've worked in the logging industry. And people that don't even live close to where our community are out here talking like they know what's going on. What's going on is the people in my community are starving to death. They can't find jobs. They can't take care of their children. They can't pay their rent. It is a big, big problem that people outside that community do not understand. This idea of asking the federal government for some more welfare forever makes no sense to me. I'm okay with for a bridge to get us somewhere. If this is where we're going, let's get this done, and then we'll ask for a bridge to get there. But shy of that, continuing to beg for welfare does not help one person in my community that needs a job. It helps the governments out, keeps them running, keeps our schools going. And I'm grateful for the past money we've gotten for that. But all these communities that have all this infrastructure that was once state-of-the-art, best in the world, timber capital of the world, has been devastated because we don't manage these natural resources. The trees are still growing. We can still cut them down. They will grow back. This is land that was set aside for this purpose. This isn't wilderness. It's not anything other than land that was designed and set aside for forest management. We should be managing it. And again, I'm sorry if you took offense at my comments, but this is one of those very rare things in this building that I am extremely passionate about. I have been involved in it my entire life. I grew up in a town, a little tiny town in Douglas County called Oakland. When I grew up there, there was a half a dozen logging companies. People made really good money working very hard and took care of their families. They're all gone. All the mills are gone out of Oakland. It is just a tragedy what we've done to rural Oregon and to southern Oregon. And again, those trees are still there. They're still growing. There's no reason we can't manage this natural resource and take care of rural Oregon and not have to beg to take care of ourselves. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've spoken on this. In fact, I've had bills in to bring our ONC lands back to the sovereignty of the state of Oregon. They have been taken under false pretenses. They've made deals with the state of Oregon that the federal government has not come through, and we've had a minority of people in this state that dictate to the majority and what's best for everyone, and they've been quite successful because we've allowed it. And that's unfortunate, folks. We should not allow that. I hear the same thing with wolves. I hear the same thing with cougars. And my colleague from Douglas County is correct. It's amazing how many people that don't live in the area want to tell you how it is. It's just amazing. I don't want to be the little kid that walks up and asks for more porridge like in our books. That's our land. That's our economy. In 1970, I came right out of Vietnam and went to work in a mill, and I made $3.74 an hour pulling green chain. But when you compute that out today with inflation, it's over $19 an hour. That gives you an idea of what kind of jobs those are. And folks, that's our land. It's our timber. It's renewable. It's the only real renewable resource we have in the state of Oregon. And money does grow on trees. I agree with Representative Schaffler. Money does grow on trees. But we're letting a minority group of people stop us from taking care of our schools and taking care of our local economies. And personally, I think it's a tragedy.
Thank you, Representative. I believe I have Representative Barnhart in the queue. I just would like to say I'm allowing a lot of latitude here. I'd like to know if there are particular concerns with the language in the SJM to decide whether or not we should pass it. Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I did want to address the language of the SJM. When I first read it, it appeared kind of shocking to me because of the alternatives that were suggested. There are actually three in the resolution, which is on page 2, lines 15. The first one would ask the Congress to transfer to the Oregon counties that are affected the lands. By transferring the title to the counties without cost or by a long-term lease of the lands to the counties for a token amount, or, and here's the third alternative, enacting without delay the ONC Trust Conservation and Jobs Plan proposed by the three representatives we've already heard from. I don't for a second think that anybody will seriously consider the first two, even though I believe that we have counties that would manage this land quite well. I happen to agree with many of the comments, not all, but many of the comments of my esteemed colleagues on the other end of the podium about this issue, because nobody takes better care of farmland than the farmer, because he knows it's got to be available for the next generation. Now, this is farmland. At least the ONC lands that I'm familiar with are all low-level lands, low-elevation lands. They grow trees very well, very rapidly. They've already been logged at least once, and they need to be in production. Now, I would not make this kind of comment about old-growth timber in the high mountains where things grow slowly, which are treasures in and of themselves, hundreds of year-old trees. I'm talking about lands that have already been harvested at least once, and which would, I think, be managed probably quite well by the counties if they were given the opportunity to do that. I do not for a second think that Congress will ever consider that possible outcome directly. I do believe that there is a chance that they may consider a much more, if I can call it this, conservative outcome, the Trust Conservation and Jobs Plan, because it has more sidebirds around it. It does restrict the use of the land more strictly, and it does set up a statewide manager for the land rather than having it done through the counties directly. I think the resolution, given that it's at least partly for shock value, it's fine. I intend to vote for it. I think it's important for us to get to Congress the seriousness of the situation that we face in Oregon, the seriousness of the problems that my two colleagues have already addressed very well. The same problem applies in my district and in the small towns in my district, and I feel just as strongly about it as they do. I will say I do not understand the testimony we've just heard when it refers to the transfer of these lands to private ownership or private control, because nothing in this resolution would do that. The lands would remain under the control of the public through either the counties or through the mechanisms set up in the Trust Conservation and Jobs Plan proposed by the congressman. I see it as a as an attempt to get Congress to actually pay attention to this problem in a way that may help us get toward a resolution that produces jobs in our rural communities, that produces traded sector materials for export, and that produces the tax revenue that our counties need in order to maintain basic public services that, indeed, we have been working on hard in the three bills that are mentioned in the testimony. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Wingert.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to echo what is said, what was already said here. I think everyone's well-intentioned. I just think that the worst mistake we can make in public policy is to lose sight of the people. It can be very easy in public policy to start thinking about other things. But at the end of the day, this has all got to be about people. And when public policy strays from that, it tends to injure people pretty severely. And what has been happening in our forests for the last couple of decades, whether we live next to it or not, has severely injured a lot of very decent people, and they didn't deserve it. So keep people in mind.
Thank you, Representative. Here's the challenge for me on this. I'll just be upfront. Our job is to review what's in front of us. I really do appreciate the comments of my colleagues. I have to say I believe the resolve section is incredibly wide open. We just had Congressman Schrader in our caucus yesterday talking about the plan he's working on with Congressman DeFazio and Walden. You know, one of the things that stood out to me in the conversation he had was requiring that those logs that come off these lands to be processed in Oregon, so we're not exporting the raw logs. I would like to see that a little bit more clear in this document. I think it makes reference to it. I think when we do joint memorials, we want them to be helpful and effective. Having had my own experience with a House joint memorial last session, I do think they take these seriously, so I want to make sure they really do make sense. I've had concerns about the timeliness of this, and is this going to help or hurt? Speaking to Representative Barnhart's comments, you know, I'm much more comfortable strictly talking about supporting that particular act because I do think it's trying to strike that balance. I understand people would like to see the other two things, but, I mean, I'm inclined to hold it over to see if we can tighten this up a little bit, not to kibosh the whole thing, but to say, what are we really trying to do here, and is the intent of the drafters to really ask for all three of those things in the resolve section?
Madam Chair, having worked with the, if I may, Dave Barrows, ONC County's, having worked with the primary drafter, Senator Girard, the original memorial that, as it was introduced, was of great concern to us. And we came to him with a good deal of alternative language, and he took about 95% of it, but he didn't take all of it. And, this is a memorial. I'm not going to, you know, cover the carpet with blood here, but I think it'd be an important statement for the legislature. I agree with Representative Barnhart. The first two are never going to happen. We tried that, actually. In the first year of Governor Kitzhaber's first term, and we had a shot at getting the title, and that failed. President Bush offered this suggestion, and not one member of Congress took up the idea of transferring the lands, the title of the lands, to the state. That's a dead issue. The Senate wanted to keep it in. That's their decision. But the one we care about, frankly, Madam Chair, is the third one. It's the three congressmen. This is in a town that is polluted with partisanship, not this town, Sodom and Gomorrah East. Everything here is just harmonious, right? It is an amazing feat by these three individuals that they have, and this hasn't been just ginned together by the staff. They have spent a year of their own time working this out and coming to an agreement. And as you, all of you know, Congressman DeFazio and Congressman Walden have somewhat different views of the world on many topics. And the fact that they could come together and agree, and with along with Congressman Schrader, is really kind of a miracle. And I think it ought to, they ought to be rewarded. I'm just fearful in the time crunch. If you start amending and all, it gets lost in the shuffle at the end, and that, I think that would be tragic.
Well, and I appreciate that. We'd like to be expeditious here, and my commitment would be if we do make changes, I want to support the three congressmen and their plan. I want to support the plan that's before. I think that's something we should try to do. And you want as many votes as possible. And I can tell you with some of that other language, we might have not as many votes as you'd like to see on the House floor. There. Representative Berger?
Yes, Madam Chair, if I could just comment that time is very short. This is an important statement from this legislature. And in conversation with Senator Girard, I believe that your suggestion for making substantive changes in this would be contrary to his intention, at least that was stated to me. And I would suggest that delay would not meet with really good feelings, because he indicated this is sort of how he wanted it to read, and if he needs to be contacted right away, if there's any intention to changing this document.
Thank you, Representative. Co-Chair Olson?
Thank you, ma'am. Co-Chair, I'm just going to echo what some of the others have said as well here. I believe this bill is ready to move now. I would prefer that we not delay it any longer due to the time, and that's kind of where I'm at with that right now. If you're planning on doing what you're wanting to do to change it around, then I'd like to have a recess for a few minutes to have some discussion about it, go deeper into it.
Thank you, Co-Chair. I'd be happy to entertain that. With that, I'm just going to close the work session on SJM 201 for the time being and open a work session on House Bill 4173. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you. Chairs and members of the committee, House Bill 4173 was previously heard on the 21st. It has no revenue impact on the introductory version or the dash ones, and no fiscal impact on the introductory versions or the dash ones. No subsequent referral. It permits printing names of political parties and the word incumbent, if applicable, with candidate's name on the ballot instead of specifying printing opposite or following a candidate's name. It declares an emergency and is effective on passage. The dash one amendment that was discussed on the 21st permits the use of three-letter abbreviations in lieu of the complete name of the political party.
Thank you, Cheyenne. So, colleagues, we did have testimony on this the other day. The base bill is there as a housekeeping to clarify, instead of opposite, saying printing the party with the candidate's name. Just to point out for the record, we do have additional testimony from Dan Meek in front of you on the dais. We did hear from Mr. Meek on the 21st. I am not in support of the dash one amendments, and so I would like to just have a work session and move the base bill as it is. I'd entertain a motion to move 4173. Co-Vice Chair Berger.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 4173 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Co-Chair, Vice Co-Chair Berger has moved House Bill 4173 be adopted on the floor. So it's moved, due pass recommendation for the floor discussion. Co-Chair Olson.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm here to support moving forward 4173. I would have liked to have had the dash one amendments, and there's a couple reasons why I feel that that's the case. One, I know that there was some testimony that said that this wasn't going to save money. I do believe that it was going to save money on the long run for the county clerks. It's unfortunate. The other reason is that there was really no comments regarding opposition back during 2010 when we did have abbreviations that were used on the ballots. So, you know, I... I just, you know, I don't see the reason why we couldn't have done this. So that's it. But I'll support where we're at with 4173.
Thank you, Mr. Kocher. I appreciate that. And as I mentioned the other day when we were talking about this bill, is that I do think we have not quite resolved the challenges for the clerks and the counties with regard to the length of the names of the parties and how we actually make this work. Unfortunately, I think that's a discussion for another day, hence my lack of interest in moving the dash ones at the moment. Any other comments on the motion to move 4173 as is? Could we have a roll call, please? Thank you.
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Representative Beyer?
Aye.
Representative Esquivel?
Aye.
Representative Freeman?
Yes.
Representative Garrett?
Aye.
Representative Winger?
Aye.
The Vice Chair Berger?
Aye.
The Vice Chair Holden?
Aye.
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 House Bill 4173, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Going to the floor. Carrier, do I have volunteers?
I can take it.
Co-Chair Olson, would you like to carry? Thank you so much. I appreciate that. Colleagues, we're going to move on to House Bill 4176. We'll close the work session on 4173 and open a work session on House Bill 4176.
Chairs and members of the committee, House Bill 4176 was also previously heard on the 21st. The intro and the dash ones have no revenue, and the intro and the dash ones have an intermediate fiscal statement. There is a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. This is the measure that replaces Declaration of Public Safety Services Emergency with the Declaration of Fiscal Emergency, permits governing body of a county to request Declaration of Fiscal Emergency in writing of the governor, describes qualifying fiscal distress as current or near future comprised ability to provide minimally adequate services required by state law, establishes review procedure, establishes the Fiscal Assistance Board, its composition, its staff, duties, and authority to comply with Home Rule Charter, if applicable, upon declaration. It establishes fiscally distressed counties fund, requires 50% contribution toward administration costs from the distressed county, requires rescission of declaration upon finding restoration of minimally adequate state-required services, declares an emergency as effective on passage. On the 21st, the dash ones were discussed. They add the local district attorney and the local sheriff to the Fiscal Assistance Board. In the intervening time, we've also received today dash fives, which you have at the dais, adding only the local sheriff. And I'm about to pass out a copy of the dash fours, which will have to be described by the proponents, which are, I believe Mr. Wolf is in the room, asking to be heard on those, and I'll pass them out now.
So, colleagues, we had seen dash ones the other day, but now we have dash fours and dash fives. Could we have Mr. Fuller and Mr. Wolf? Or whoever would like to speak on the dash fours, come to the podium. Actually, if we could, we're going to stand at ease a moment.